This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Netflix is not only known for their streaming service, but their original programming is bar none. Joining me this month to speak about some of the top original Netflix programming is Editor-in-Chief of Extremist, Rob Toledo. Thanks for joining me, Rob.
Thanks for having me on.
When it comes to Netflix, what do you think are some of the top original programming out right now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I actually just was thinking about this the other day, and I put together a short little list. Kind of going back to, you know, the start of Netflix originals, and I kind of just think, I wonder what my favorite ones are. You know, still at the top of the list, and this might just be because of what it meant when it came out, but I still think the first two seasons of House of Cards are some of the best original content on Netflix. Some of my other favorite ones are Narcos, which is a really exciting series about Pablo Escobar and his kind of upcoming, or like when he was, his upbringing, and then also his subsequent demise. Stranger Things season 1 and 2, of course, are I think probably some of my favorite content on the service as well. A recent one called Mindhunter really got my attention. It was about the early days in the FBI when they were doing criminal profiling of serial killers. Really fascinating show, kind of dark, but I definitely enjoyed it. I think overall the Marvels have been pretty consistently enjoyable. I think, you know, it started out really strong with the first season of Daredevil and the first season of Jessica Jones. I think they had a few misfires with Iron Fist, but I really enjoyed that first season of Punisher. Another kind of one of their probably longest running and most successful, both critically and commercially, has been BoJack Horseman, which is a cartoon show, but it's more kind of aimed at adults. And it started out kind of clunky, but I think the past few seasons have been really strong. I'm really enjoying, although he's been in a little bit of hot water publicly recently, Aziz Ansari's Master of None. I really just kind of enjoy kind of the whimsical nature of the show and its fun portrayal of like New York City. It's a fun show. And another show that's always been kind of immensely popular on the service recently has been The Crown, too. It was one of the first shows that Netflix released in 4K, so it got a bunch of attention for, you know, high definition and being this real beautiful show, and it's done really well, and I've found it to be pretty enjoyable myself.
You know, the reason I ask about, like, original programming is because as of lately, last year mostly, a lot of companies have been pulling their content from Netflix. Do you see coming into this year that they're going to be doing more original content?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I think I wouldn't be surprised if, I read somewhere that Netflix has to spend somewhere between, I am going to get the numbers wrong, and it's always changing. And Netflix has never directly, I think, given a number, but somewhere between, like, $5 and $6 billion on content. And I think that their plan is at some point to spend half of that on original content. I think kind of the direction they're heading is to be kind of that HBO level of content distribution where they're producing a lot of shows and then they kind of pick up a few here and there as well from third parties. But, you know, I think Netflix survival really does rely heavily on creating strong original content. And not even strong, just like a large array of content might even be the better word. They don't have to have everything be, you know, kind of a prestige show. They release, you know, some clunkers, certainly. But, you know, if they can find audiences for those shows and it keeps the Netflix subscriber base happy, then that's their main goal here.
You know, I was reading that Netflix is going to start doing more anime, like not original, but they're going to, I guess, get the licensing to it. Do you think that's smart since you have Viz Media? I think Funimation has its own channel, Crunchyroll. I mean, that's kind of...
Crunchyroll, yeah.
Yeah, they've all been solidified. Why would they want to throw their hat in that arena?
That's a good question. I think that there's probably just so much of it. You know, there is a lot of anime out there, and I think that Netflix could certainly buy up the rights to a few of those shows and series. And you know, I think there's always... I'd be willing to bet that most people who are subscribers to those anime-specific streaming services are probably Netflix subscribers as well. At least there's probably a pretty big crossover. So I think that for Netflix, you know, it's just an opportunity to kind of expand into a new kind of a new niche of content. You know, they have a little bit on there now, I think. I'm not too up to date on what they have, but you know, I just read a report recently actually that Japan's Netflix library is actually just overtook the United States library in size. I think the United States Netflix library has somewhere around like 5,500 titles on it, and Japan actually just surpassed 6,000 titles, so they just took over as the world's biggest Netflix library. And I dug into the numbers a little bit further, and it talked about this on the report, and it said that you know, it had a lot to do with anime titles. And so I think that that was, you know, an interesting point that, you know, if Netflix plans to make their, maybe their library title count look a little bit bigger in the United States, anime might be a good way to do that.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I would watch every single one they have because I like anime. And you never find the same titles everywhere. So it's kind of interesting when it comes to anime, you have to have about like three or four different services just to get enough to feed your need.
Yeah, of course.
Now, one of the things that Netflix is, I guess, going to be doing more of is movies. Do you think that's going to change the landscape of how movies and TV is going to be done?
I think Netflix and movies are, I think Netflix is struggling with movies a little bit right now. It's been interesting. They've released several with, you know, some pretty big names, like Brad Pitt had a movie, you know, the Will Smith movie Bright, which I actually thought was fun, and I think commercially it did well, but critically it did very poorly. You know, and I think they're kind of still waiting for that moment where they maybe just have like a blockbuster, you know, film do really well on the service and kind of garner that critical attention that maybe they've been looking for, similar to kind of how, you know, House of Cards came out with their first big original show and it did really well. They've kind of struggled to have that moment in the movie industry, and I'm not sure what it is. I think maybe they're just, you know, trying a lot of different things right now and waiting for one of them to work, but, you know, or maybe Netflix just doesn't care about the same things that the movie studios might. You know, the critical attention is probably like secondarily important to, you know, just making sure that their subscribers enjoy the films they release. So, you know, I think we read recently that, you know, some of Netflix's most successful content have been the Adam Sandler movies, and, you know, Bright did well with the audiences, you know, and so those movies are not going to do well on Rotten Tomatoes, but does the Netflix audience care? Probably not. You know, if they enjoy the movies and the Netflix subscribers are enjoying them, then Netflix is happy.
There was a movie that came out, The Cloverfield Paradox, that I... Did you watch it, first of all? Because I was confused
by it. I did, and I am so excited to talk about this. So the Cloverfield Paradox was interesting because of how... I think because of how they marketed the movie, right? I had heard nothing of this film at all, and no one else really had either, you know, minus maybe a few of the people who have been working on it. And then all of a sudden, here I am watching the Super Bowl, and this ad comes on for this movie, and I'm thinking, oh, this is exciting, like another Cloverfield movie. I really enjoyed Cloverfield Lane, and I enjoyed the original one, you know, from several years ago. So I got really excited, and then at the very end of the trailer, during the Super Bowl, it says, available on Netflix after the game. And I'm just thinking, what? Like, that is so cool that they did this as, like, a marketing tactic, you know. I thought it was just one of the most unique kind of ways to release a movie, especially for Netflix to take such a bold move. Then I watched the movie, and I was really disappointed. I thought, you know, I would, like I said, I really enjoyed the first two films. This one just was so clunky, and, you know, the sci-fi in it was super inconsistent, and it barely tied back into the Cloverfield universe, you know. And I won't say how it ends, but, you know, there's, like, very little tie-in to the kind of the original, you know, Cloverfield universe when I think about it. I don't know. I think it did really poorly, both critically and, like, the audience scores have been really low. I think last I checked, it had a 17% on Rotten Tomatoes and then a 48% audience score, which is really low. Did you watch it?
I did. And, you know, I'm not sure if I should spoil or I shouldn't, because it was so confusing. I had to read multiple articles, so I'm not even sure if people listening want to go through it, or you think I should just talk about it? You know what? I'm going to do it.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah, just say, hey, spoiler alert. Yeah.
Yeah, spoiler alert. Okay, everybody. So just to let you know, Cloverfield Paradox has alternate dimensions. And from what I read, that each alternate reality was affected by the test run done by the people in this movie. Like, I guess they're testing out a new way to have new energy. And when they actually ran it, it backfired, did something they didn't take into consideration. And suddenly this is how the monsters all appear throughout the Cloverfield thing, you know, movie, series or franchise. So, and that's where I was getting confused. Is that true? Or am I just like, did I read too many like conspiracy theories on it?
I think you're probably right. I think that's what happened. Now, here's kind of what I've heard, and this is very disappointing, I think, for the universe overall. I think the movie was originally made not to be in the Cloverfield universe. I think it was going to be an individual film, the way the script was originally written. J.J. Abrams and company kind of got their hands on it and thought, oh, we could probably tie this into the Cloverfield universe. You know, there's a lot of cool ways that they could, you know, bring the monsters to Earth through alternate realities and stuff. And on paper, I think that all sounds kind of fun and exciting. I just think the movie did a really poor job with that concept. You know, I think you know, overall people were really confused. They felt it was very shoehorned into, you know, the universe. Kind of at the end, there's that big reveal, and it's just like, what? And here's kind of what I've heard, and this is a rumor. Netflix obviously hasn't said anything to this effect, but I heard that the movie studio sold the rights to this movie to Netflix for like $50 million, and that was just an attempt by them to basically recoup their money on a film that probably was, you know, going to be, you know, maybe just dumped in the theaters, kind of have a couple weeks of running and just see if they can recoup their money. And then Netflix came along and offered to buy it. And so I think that's probably, they were like, sweet. There's this podcast series called Half in the Bag. I'm not sure if you're familiar. They talk about, you know, Netflix and movie studio releases and stuff. And they said that, they brought up a kind of a funny comment. They said, is Netflix going to be the straight-to-DVD for movies in the near future? And that made me really nervous thinking about, like, if a studio gets done with a movie and they're not happy with it, if they just dump it to Netflix, you know? Like, it's that old, like, DVD in the grocery store that no one has ever heard of type model. And it's, you know, it's like, oh, no, I hope that Netflix can turn it around and release some good movies, because I'd hate to see that happen.
Yeah, they're going to have a bunch of Sharknados, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
well, you know, I try to have fun with movies like that because I like space movies. I like alternate realities. And you're right about that. I mean, the whole thing just felt like we're going to just cram this circle through a square peg and we're going to make it work. But
that's right.
I don't know. We'll see what happens in the future if it even connects to another Cloverfield movie. But a series that I absolutely loved, and I hope you did too, was Altered Carbon. What did you think of that one?
I really liked it. I thought it was fun. I think it stayed relatively true to the book. It took, you know, it's based on that Richard Morgan book or whatever. I think it took a few creative liberties. And I think the complaint that I've been reading, and I'd say I'd probably agree with this, is it was a little bit messy. You know, I think that there was a little bit of filler content in there. But at the same time, I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. And I thought the acting was good. The sci-fi concepts were fun. I love, you know, that concept of consciousness kind of just being moved from one body to the next and how they're all intertwined and stuff. I thought that was really fun. But, for you know, I was actually surprised. I checked again on Rotten Tomatoes this week, and it did pretty poorly. It got like a 64, and I was like, oh, I would have kind of predicted high 70s, low 80s on this. But, you know, maybe something critically just didn't hit. But the audience score was a little bit higher, I believe. I think it was more in the 80s. So that tells you, once again, just audiences and critics not lining up.
Well, you know, I notice when it comes to books going into TV series or movies, there's always going to be like, is it true to the book? And that usually what brings the score down.
Did you see Annihilation? It came out this week.
No, I haven't.
It's kind of backwards, because in the United States it got released in the theaters, and almost everywhere else in the world is being put on Netflix this month.
Wow.
Which I was like, hey, wait a minute. I want to watch it on Netflix, but I ended up going and seeing it, and I had read the book as well, and I enjoyed the book a lot, and I enjoyed the movie, but kind of like you're saying, they're two very separate things. Like I'm not sure the book would have made a good movie, and so I'm glad they took their creative liberty and kind of did their own thing, but kind of similar to Altered Carbon, I think. You know, if you stick too close to a narrative in literature, sometimes I think, you know, books and movies are two different mediums in a big way, and, you know, so sometimes it's just tough to appease those huge fans of the book, you know.
Yeah, when it came to Harry Potter, some of the books I didn't like, or not the books, the movies, Goblet of Fire, I'll never forget. I saw that in theater and I was like, this is it? This is the Quidditch match? This whole chapter full, and this is all I got? I was so upset. I wanted to walk out of the theater. But it was funny. My friend was like, you and this little girl were both complaining about the same thing. And I was like, shut up.
You know, when you're a big fan, you're a big fan.
Yeah, absolutely, right? There was another movie that I heard didn't do too well, but I watched it. It was Mute. It was kind of funny. It wasn't supposed to be, but I thought it was funny.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. You see the thumbnail of it on Netflix, and it's Paul Rudd, right? And he's got like a goofy-looking mustache. And you're
yeah.
thinking, oh, that should be, looks like a comedy. And then you're watching it, and you're like, this isn't a comedy. I wasn't too super crazy about it. But yeah, just another one of those Netflix movies that I'm just like, man, like, they just are having trouble kind of landing that big, you know, that big success in that realm.
Yeah, it was, the story itself was like, it was kind of, I don't know. Just it used plot devices that it didn't need. Like the Skarsgård was Amish, so that's why he didn't get his stuff fixed, his throat fixed, so he could speak.
Right.
And that was the whole point of it being called Mute. He has to go through this futuristic Germany to figure out what happened to his girlfriend. I was like, that was so unnecessary, because I think it was like I don't know how into the future it was, but it was so futuristic. I'm not sure if the Amish would even be in Germany at this point.
I don't. Yeah.
But it was different, and I watched the whole thing, and I was a bit disappointed. I thought it would be, like, because you're right, Paul Rudd was in it, and I thought it was going to be so much better, and it didn't hit the mark with me. One movie that I absolutely loved, though, was The Ritual. Did you see that one?
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet. I haven't even seen that one on Netflix.
Okay, so I don't know if this is, like, a British movie or what movie this is, but it's called The Ritual. And, you know, a bunch of guys go into the forest, and it's a big bad in the forest. It's a ghost or something. And I thought when I was watching it, you wouldn't see the ghost in the forest, because they teased it for the first, like, 3/4 of the movie. And I was going to be really disappointed. I was like, oh, it's one of those movies that you're always going to get the jump scare but never see it. And they actually show you what the monster looks like. So I thought that was really cool about it. So, if you haven't seen it, go see it. Like, honestly, it was decent.
Yeah. Okay, I'm remembering this now. I haven't watched it yet, but it's the guys are on like a hiking trip, right? And one of them gets hurt, and they end up going through the woods. Yeah. I saw a trailer for that. That looked really intense. I'll definitely have to do that one to watch here soon.
Yeah, it was a lot better than I thought, because, you know, when you see movies like as horror movies, you just think like, oh, they're all in the forest and it's dark and it's suspenseful and you're going to get a bunch of jump scares and everybody dies. Right. That wasn't the case here. And I was pleasantly surprised. I was like, OK, this is a little different. I thought it was pretty cool.
Nice. I'll check that one out.
But one movie I'm halfway through with it is Full Metal Alchemist. Did you watch that or no?
You know what? So I was very excited to talk to you about this movie, because I know that you're a big anime fan, and I'm curious what your thoughts are, actually, because it's an adaptation, right, from a manga, and then it got turned into a show, and now it's a movie, and it's live action now? I'm understanding all this correct, right?
Yeah, it's live action.
So I read some reviews, and it seems like the people who are fans of kind of these, once again, we're back on that source material topic, you know, the originals are not super happy with this. Have you found that to be true?
You know, when it comes to anything live action, do you remember Dragon Ball Z, the live action one?
Oh,
it was horrible.
Yeah.
I take live action with a grain of salt, and I just enjoy it for what it is, because when it comes to anime, I mean, some of these series have gone on for 18 years, and I'm sure people are listening like, what, are you serious? Yes, they go on for years. There's so much content in these series, it's almost impossible to put it into a live action 2-hour movie. So you get what you get.
Right.
And I liked it so far. But my thing is that whenever it's subtitled, I have to really pay attention. So I can't play with my phone. I can't play a game. I can't read and go through the internet. So that's what's taking me forever. But, you know, taking it for what it is, I liked it. It's not bad, you know?
I just saw on Rotten Tomatoes, like, when it was released last month, right, like February 18th or something, and it only got like a 40% on Rotten Tomatoes, and then, you know, about a 70% audience score, which is, you know, I was thinking people were probably, I would have thought there would have been more excitement around it, and then I'm wondering if that excitement turned into disappointment, because it just wasn't quite as good as people were hoping, but I'll have to give it a shot.
Yeah, you know, when any kind of anime goes into live action, I give it a shot anyways, just to see like what they're trying to put in there. And they're, like I said, you're not going to put everything in there. You can't. It's almost impossible. So it's almost like you're watching a synopsis of 20 years of a manga or an anime. And it's kind of cool to see the concept of it, to see how cartoony they really go, or how the actors are.
Right.
And I just appreciate it for what it is. Why get mad, right?
Yeah, totally.
Are there any upcoming movies this month that are coming out on Netflix, Hulu, or Amazon?
Movies, not so, I mean, like, as far as originals go.
Yeah,
there's a couple. I mean, to be completely honest, I'm mostly excited about Jessica Jones season 2 coming out on Netflix this month. I feel like it's been at least a year and a half since that first season came out, right?
Yeah.
And then A Series of Unfortunate Events season 2, I'm really excited for that one. Hulu has, I don't know if this is really a movie, it's more of a, I guess, kind of a short series, but a show that just released yesterday called The Looming Tower, which is kind of like the recap of the events leading up to, like, 9/11, and it's supposedly gotten really good reviews, and the first 3 episodes are available on Hulu now, and I enjoyed the first episode a lot. I'm excited to watch the next 2 today and tomorrow.
And nothing on Amazon? It's like, come on, Amazon.
Oh, Amazon has... Have you heard of a show called Sneaky Pete? It's kind of like a con man show.
You know, I've seen that in my queue, like as recommended.
Yeah.
That's an original one?
Yeah, it's an original, and their second season is coming out this month. The first season's really fun. It kind of, like, once again, we're talking about Amazon here, who I just can't think, just haven't, like, figured out how to market their content yet. That second season is coming out, and I really enjoyed the first season. And kind of similar to what you just said, I just kind of came across it, you know, by accident streaming through their their video interface, and they're like, "Oh, this looks kind of interesting," and I like the actor in it. I forget his name, but he's in, been in a bunch of crime shows and crime movies, and so it ended up being really good. And I'm just thinking in my head, I'm like, man, why is Amazon putting all this money into all this content and then just like not following through with the marketing, with, you know, of these shows?
Well, when you have that much money, I think you can afford it. Why not, right?
Exactly right.
Speaking of Amazon, I just thought of this. The Tick. I loved it. I forgot that I watched the hell out of that.
I guess it's not technically season two, but it was like season 1B or whatever. But yeah, isn't that just such a fun show? I love that actor so much. He's such a goof. And that's a show that I think everyone... It ended up kind of getting chosen as like a fan favorite. Amazon did this thing for a while, and I think they're stopping it, where they would release a bunch of pilots, and then whatever pilots did well, they would do show orders for. And that show, I think, was above and beyond everything else by far when it came to popularity. I think everyone was like, yes, more of this, please. Now we're, moving on to season two, hopefully next year, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, me too. I was surprised that it did so well. I really liked the dude who played the Tick, and the only thing I can think of him playing in was Shaun of the Dead. And I know he played in something else, too, but the actor who played the Tick was in Shaun of the Dead, and he was this big, tall, lanky, skinny dude. So it's kind of hard for me to see him as a big bulky superhero, but it was interesting. And I really loved it.
Yeah, I think he was in John Wick 2, which I loved, those movies. And what was the other one he was in? He's kind of like that guy in movies who's, he's like never really the main character, but he's always there,
Yeah, and this doesn't help that he's in a mask now. So it's like, oh yeah, it's the guy, that guy in that movie,
That's right, yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Rob, for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Yeah, they can find us on extremist.com if they're ever looking for what's new and coming to, all the streaming services, Netflix, Hulu, and et cetera. We'll have the info for you.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's masonverapayne.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.